used to be that Muggsy was the one. And the Bobcat years were painfully long. And I was for the signing of Kimba. But then we beat the lottery's long odds. If he can be it, then we can do it. If we just believe it, he'll lead us to it. I believe he's our guy.
Nick Wilson, Stan Norfleet. The second listen in on the Hack Song of the Week. You guys can pitch in on the text line or Diamond Direct Twitter feed, by the way. I feel like I'm listening to R. Kelly sing about the Charlotte Hornets in LaMelo Ball.
It's just so moving. It's touching. It's inspirational. Hacksaw, I'm feeling good about this one. I'm not talking about R. Kelly with you, Nick. I'm not falling for that at all. I just completely ignored the R. Kelly comment.
That's likely to only get you and I in much more trouble than we're probably already
like we really need more of that.
We've got to get two more listens to the Hack Song in at 4 and at 5, and then Hacksaw's going to join us at 5 p.m. to break down his latest masterpiece. But our next guest, I'm a little concerned, because our next guest is a respected professor. He's
Boston
a respected
University,
member of the NBA media, and now he's going to have to schlub it with us after a Hack Song denigrating one of the great songs.
Yeah, my man does great work for Bleacher Report as well as Ebony.com. Yeah, he's Sherrod's a bad boy.
It's Sherrod Blakely, NBA writer for Bleacher Report. Sherrod, welcome to the show.
Thanks, I appreciate being here. Now, I must admit, when I was told in advance that you guys were doing a little whack job on a song, I didn't realize it would be that song. I thought you guys were going to go with Boys to Men, End of the Road.
Not
June. Because when I think about the lyrics to that song, lyrics like We Belong Together and You Know That I'm Right, you got to be believing Timber's feeling that way after going from the Boston Celtics to OKC, which is in total rebuild mode right now.
It is. So I where did it go wrong with Kemba in Boston? How did we get here in 2 years?
I'll tell you. It's literally as simple as health. I mean, you guys were fortunate to have Kemba at a time when he was able to play through pretty much anything and everything health-wise. And to his credit, I mean, he was the Iron Man of Iron Men in the NBA. When you look at the amount of mileage that his body went through and his ability to play at such a high level. And you had the feeling that at some point, all that wear and tear would catch up with him. And it did in Boston. Kemba simply could not stay healthy enough on the floor for the Celtics to really feel as though they were getting their money's worth and that the team was getting better. It became very challenging from a continuity standpoint, from a chemistry standpoint, and just overall end of the day production standpoint. And so that was a big part of why the Celtics were even entertaining the idea of trading Kemba, because you guys know Kemba is just such a good guy. It's hard to find anyone in the NBA that doesn't like him. But the one thing that Kemba understands all too well, and most guys in the league do, it's a business, and you need to be productive. And if there are circumstances that are preventing you from doing that, either teams are going to move you ASAP, or they're going to try to manage it, which they tried to do, and it wasn't working. And so that's why Kemba's
on a
move to OKC.
Hey, Sherrod, Stan Fleet here, man. Appreciate you again. So here's what I don't understand about Boston Celtics fans, right? And maybe this ties into
that's a lot. I'm going to tell you right now before you ask the question, that's a lot of luggage you're trying to unpack.
Fair. and one segment isn't going to allow us to do it. But some of the fans, they were disgruntled with Gordon Hayward and, you know, the unfortunate injury there. And that's separate from this. But, like, okay, Kemba had a knee issue. He still made the All-Star team there last season. You know, he was still in the conference finals. He's still a productive player when on the floor. Do they forget how dysfunctional things were a year before Kemba got there when you were dealing with Kyrie's crazy bleep?
Yeah, yeah, they do forget. And that's not that unusual. You know, it's what are you doing for me now? And a lot of folks forget about what Kemba did, you know, last year and what he did in Charlotte and think more about what he didn't do this past year, when they had a number of guys that were impacted by COVID, and Kemba either couldn't play or they were just kind of load managing his minutes. Kemba didn't play in any back-to-back this year, and that's very unusual for a player who should be, you know, he's your max guy, one of your max guys. And bringing in Al Horford and sending Kemba out, for them makes a lot of sense because it strengthens their front court. It gives them a player that, from a health standpoint, is a little bit more reliable. And for NSA money, I mean, let's not get it twisted. That's a big part of why they made this particular trade, is that it's going to give them some salary flexibility sooner rather than later by doing this. And they're getting a young player in Moses Brown from Oklahoma City, who had damn near 20 rebounds in the first half when they played Boston Celtics. So they feel they're getting a good player, a more durable player, a young prospect, and it comes at the cost of Kemba. But look, the thing about Kemba, and again, I can't reiterate this enough, Kemba's a hard dude to not have some kind of feelings that this just wasn't right for him, that he's not getting an opportunity to be in a situation that someone who's done as much as he has should get that opportunity, which is why I think Kemba will be on the move again. Don't be shocked by the time we get to the start of next season that Kemba's playing for the Knicks. I absolutely think that will happen.
Sherrod Blakely, NBA writer for the Bleacher Report on the Technicom Hotline, breaking down what went wrong in Boston. That's a tasty nugget there on the Kemba thing to New York, and we'll get to that, I'm sure, before the end of this conversation. But if we look at what happened at the end of the playoffs for Boston, or the play-in tournament, rather, Danny Ainge steps aside. Brad Stevens moves up to be the GM there. Now he's searching for what seems to be an assistant coach to come be the head coach in Boston. How did this all come to fruition, and what is your faith that Brad Stevens can be a good, great, better than that NBA GM?
Well, I think the one thing that jumps out right away is that Brad's going to be decisive. I mean, you look around, no one is making trades at this point in the season. Typically, you know, we were at least able to get past the combine before teams start making some moves and things like that. So Brad has shown already that he's going to be very decisive and not just kind of dilly-dally about his business. I think he can be a good one, but there is, like any other job, like any other profession, there's going to be a learning curve. And how quickly he can navigate that is going to determine how quickly he can be, I think, a good GM. But he's also, I think, a pretty good start. The coaching search that you mentioned, it does appear as though they're looking to bring in an assistant. And I think that they're looking to do that for two reasons. One, it's just cheaper. It's much cheaper to hire someone with no NBA head coaching experience or limited head coaching experience as opposed to someone who's been in the game for, you know, 5-10 years as a head coach. So it's cheaper, and it also gives them a chance to really mold this coach in their role with a team that is also kind of being molded. I mean, you got Jason Tatum, you got Jaylen Brown, and then you're still trying to figure out exactly what does it look like around those guys. So they have the ability to bring in a head coach who can both work with this team that's basically like a big blob of clay, but you got two really nice parts of that in Jaylen Brown and Tatum. So that's why I think for them it makes a lot of sense to go with an assistant coach as the next head coach of the Celtics.
That's the voice of A. Sherrod Blakely, NBA writer, NBA writer for the Bleacher Report, if I can get it out, Boston Sports Journal, as well as Ebony.com, A-list podcast, and a lecturer at Boston University, talking Kemba Walker's trade from the Celtics to Oklahoma City today and what the hell is going on in Boston. Mr. Blakely, I text with a – say that again?
I said, yes, sir.
I text with a longtime NBA man last night, and I asked him, of the jobs that are currently available, what he thought was the best job. Because we've got a coach in James Rego that's just had his fourth year extended.
Yeah.
Boston and Dallas were tied for first in this particular personnel's man. I ask you, this personnel man's mind says Boston and Dallas. Is Boston the best open job, or is this a trap?
I would say, and again, I'll explain why I'm saying Boston, and you'll understand why I'm picking them. When you are an NBA head coach and it's your first time doing a job, you want to have the best team possible. And when I look at the openings out there, no one has two All-Stars under the age of 25 other than Boston. So right then and there, you know you're getting two legitimate high-impact players from the jump. Would not be surprised if Jason Tatum is the leading scorer in the NBA next season. He's got that type of versatility in his game from an offensive standpoint. And Jaylen Brown, yes, he had the wrist surgery during the playoffs last year, and he may miss some early parts of the season, but he's going to be a high-impact player as well. So that, for me, more than anything else, is why I say the Celtics are probably the most attractive job because of the core pieces they have in tow right now and the fact that you're working with a GM who is probably going to be a little bit more malleable to whatever it is you want to do and is going to be a little bit more open-minded to your ideas and suggestions as a head coach, because just like you're learning how to do the job, he too is learning how to do the job. And I think for a young coach, I think that can be to their benefit because, again, it creates a much more open line of dialogue. And with you being the one that this new GM, Brad Stevens, is hiring, there is going to be increased pressure on him to make sure he gets it right and that he's doing everything he can to help support his coach. So I think Boston is the most attractive position that's open right now because of all of those reasons.
Sherrod, looking at the NBA at large, one of the things we're trying to figure out here in Charlotte is just what names, what tangible names are going to be out there this offseason, because there doesn't appear to be a James Harden, right? Or like when we start talking about the top 50 players in the NBA, as of right now, there doesn't seem to be clarity on that. So what names, and again, top 50, it doesn't have to be James, it doesn't have to be Bradley Beal, but what names could be on the move this offseason?
Well, I think one name to keep an eye on, and again, it's one of those pie in the sky type things, and I don't think he's going to switch teams, but it could very well happen. It's Chris Paul. He has the ability to opt out of his contract and hit the free agent market, and he's looking for a multi-year deal. And even though his age may scare a lot of teams off, he's 36 years old. You look at his play, you look at his production, and most important, you look at the impact that he makes. And if there's ever a time to pay someone in their mid to late 30s, better than $30, $35 million a year, Chris Paul is the guy to do that with. So I would not be surprised if he becomes the biggest name to find themselves a new home. Another name to keep an eye on, I would say, is DeMar DeRozan, who has been a legitimate 20-point-per-game scorer throughout the course of his career. Kyle Lowry, I think, will re-sign with Toronto, but that's another one to definitely keep an eye on. And once you get past those guys, Mike Conley, I think I mentioned Mike Conley as well, Kawhi Leonard, the pickings get really slim. And then you run the risk of paying top-tier dollar for middle-class talent. And that's something you just don't want to do if you're an NBA team. We've seen what that looks like, and it's never pretty. So this is not the year to have a significant number of needs at the top of your roster. If you're looking to fill in here and there, great year to do that because there's a lot of guys that can meet that need.
Follow this man on Twitter right now, A. Sherrod Blakely. That's at A. Sherrod Blakely. You know him as an NBA writer for the Bleacher Report. Sherrod, great stuff. And I can tell you from the guy who wrote the song Coming In, he likes you because you said his work was fun. And that's all that really matters to him or us.
Not a problem. It's great catching up with you guys. I mean, having spent 5 years down in Raleigh, North Carolina, I am very familiar with the Queen City and what it has to offer. So you guys do a good job. Great talking with you guys.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate you, Sherrod.
There on the Bleacher Report, or on the Bleacher Report on the Technicom Hotline. Really, really great dude and great at what he does. A lot to get into still, Stan, but Sports Radio WFNC has an all-new, updated app. Go to your iTunes or Android app store, type in Sports Radio WFNC, and download. It's that easy. Hear the latest on the Hornets and Panthers, plus get more sports news in our social feed. Get connected, and stay updated with Sports Radio FNZ. And we doubted the Bucks. We doubted the Bucks could do it, but yet they did it. Next on Sports Radio FNC.
That's going to do it. The series is tied at 3-3, and we'll have a Game 7 on Saturday. Middleton and Antetokounmpo combining for 68 points.
Sports Radio FNC, that is the final call of Milwaukee's 104-89 win over Brooklyn in Game 6, Stan, to pull that series to a Game 7. And I feel a little slighted for my guy Jrue Holiday, the announcer from ESPN there, announcing that that they had 68 points, did Giannis and Middleton. What he didn't mention was that Jrue Holiday pitched in with 21, even though it wasn't a great shooting night, and that the rest of the Bucks combined had 16 points. So it was It was Giannis, Middleton, and a sprinkling of Jrue Holiday last night to get the series to 7 games.
So this was a game that we anticipated, right, with Kevin Durant come close to duplicating the historic effort he had in game five. We wanted to see if Giannis was up to the task. We thought that the home crowd would be impactful. They were. But this was an ugly basketball game. Like, both teams did not shoot the ball particularly well, but Milwaukee did what Milwaukee normally does. And I was happy to see, I'm curious what you think, although Giannis didn't lead the team in scoring, Middleton did at 38 points. This was about Giannis. 0 3-point attempts, got to the foul line 10 times, made 6 of those 10, and in 41 minutes, he attacked the rim like old school LeBron. And that was the recipe to winning the game. Go ahead.
Giannis didn't lead the team in scoring, but Giannis led the team.
Exactly. Perfectly stated. Mm-hmm.
And that – so when you and I talked about that game last night in the 540 segment before we got into What You Burning On, that's what you and I both said needed to happen. Not necessarily the no three-pointers. I think that was a nice touch. There was no subtlety there. But the way that he attacked the interior part – of the Nets defense is what he should have been doing for a very long time. Mm-hmm. And again, much like you and I were in like uniformity about this, that what that allows is it then opens up things for Middleton. And while we're at it, can we just talk about the fact that Chris Middleton is changing a narrative about him? Because Chris Middleton in the last 4 games, the whole buzz on Middleton is, well, he's a good 3, but he's not a good 2 in terms of a big 3. Well, Chris Middleton's last 4-game stretch, in which Milwaukee is 3-1 and has overcome, and now to some degree overcome an 0-2 deficit start to the series, Chris Middleton's 4-game stretch, 29 points per game, 8 rebounds per game, 5 assists per game, and just under 44% shooting from 3-point over the last 4 games. A lot of that has to do with Giannis engaging offensively in these games. And over those 4 games, you've seen him settle less on mid-range jumpers and threes and really attack the basket. Now the question is, can you repeat that formula with just enough help in Game 7?
I'm looking at something interesting here. One thing that comes up, and I have a couple other thoughts, but this one specifically about Chris Middleton. At home, 27 points a game, making just about a little bit over 3 3-pointers per game, shooting 53% from the field, and 50% from 3. On the road, his points per game come down like 8. One less 3-pointer. His field goal percentage drops from 53 to 37. Middleton in a critical game 7. He's going to have to play like a true – he can't be Robin. He's got to be like a 1A. This has got to be like a Batman, Superman type of thing. This can't be Robin, because I don't think Giannis has shown us that you can put the whole thing on me in the playoffs, and I'm going to take you there.
Well, and I think, see, for me in Game 7, I think it's fair to put it on Giannis that, okay, let's go, you go do that. But I think even if Giannis does, that you can put it on me, the reality is the you can put it on me thing only works if teams can't just focus on stopping doing what you want to. And that's why Chris Middleton is the key to the series. Because you got just enough. Jrue Holiday gave you just enough, right?
Mm-hmm.
Brook Lopez gave you another 8 points despite a pretty putrid shooting night from him as well.
They all shot outside. Terrible, pretty much. Yeah.
PJ shot like bleep. But
I mean,
like,
look at this. To the point you're on real quick, don't lose that. One, two, PJ Tucker hit 1-3. Jrue Holiday hit 1-3. Nobody else other than Middleton made a three.
Yep. And what? When Chris is making his shots, and let's be honest, they did that at home. So everybody else is busted, they're tired, they do what role players do in the NBA playoffs, which is some have good moments and then some disappear. When you're going back on the road where your role players have, by and large, played like crap for the first three games in Brooklyn, you're going to need Chris Middleton hitting those shots, because that will give Giannis a little extra juice to continue doing what he did in Game 6. It is those two guys. Everybody else is following behind them. And on the Brooklyn side, I still like James Harden, clearly not 100%, but I'm still blown away that Milwaukee didn't go out of their way to run James Harden out of that game.
I'm going to come back to Milwaukee real quick before we move over to Brooklyn. For me, two things. One, kudos PJ Tucker. He only had three points. He was 1-for-5 from the three-point line. But in 34 minutes, he was plus 30 on the floor. He continues to be an irritant, and I absolutely applaud his conditioning. To be able to guard Kevin Durant for as long as he has, for an entire series, hats off to him. Jrue Holiday, you only made 1-3-2. But your silly bleep, he's a good dude. I shouldn't say that. But he continued to just jack up threes. He was 1-for-10. That was not the formula that was working last night. The formula was pound the paint, drive, let Giannis finish, or give it to Middleton and let Middleton finish it off. Jrue Holiday is too good of a player to be doing that. Like, stop that.
Yeah, with Jrue really quickly, like, he's such a great defender that you have to live with nights last night. You know, he's so instrumental on
and
being able to push guys specific ways. But I'm not trying to put this all on Bud, but that's a moment where you have to go to Bud and say, like, yo, you're 1-for-10.
bro.
That's why when that lead got down to 5 points inside, what, 7 minutes, 6 minutes?
Yep.
When Milwaukee's double-digit lead got pared down to 5 points, I thought Milwaukee's losing it. They're going to lose it home. They're going to lose it home because we've seen them. We'd already seen a collapse from them.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was just like, this is going to be their Vietnam. They're going to have this flashback. And it's going to be a thing that it's what Philly did in the two previous, or what Atlanta did, or what Philly did against Atlanta in their two previous games. I just saw the writing on the wall. So on one hand, I was impressed that Milwaukee was able to counter to that. My problem going forward, Stan, I think that result, if that game was in Brooklyn last night, I think the Milwaukee Bucks are being sent home and not for a Game 7.
Tough to say. Here are a couple things that I look at with the Nets. You know, look, Kevin Durant, you're not going to stop him. He's going to get his buckets. Kevin Durant last night was 32, 11, 3 assists. Here's where Kevin Durant, and there's a word that I want to introduce here, and I saw it across the Nets roster. They're fatigued. Kevin Durant was tired. He logged another 40 minutes last night. How do I know Kevin Durant was tired? He only got to the free throw line twice, missed both of them. How do I know Kevin Durant is tired? 3 assists, 7 turnovers. He was minus 25 on the floor last night. Same thing, I think, has impacted Joe Harris. The same thing, You mean Uncle Jeff Green isn't going to come off the bench and drop another 20-plus piece on – listen, I believe Milwaukee's going to win this game seven because I think Milwaukee is better conditioned, and I think the bigger team over the course of the series, unless Kevin Durant erupts for another 40 spot again, they've worn down with P.J. Tucker and others, Drew Holiday, they've worn down this Nets team.
Do you know what this game seven reminds me of?
Hit me.
It reminds me of a similar, in terms of what we're shaping up to see, it reminds me of a similar second round Eastern Conference playoffs matchup, Game 7 2 years ago between Philadelphia and Toronto, where it took Kawhi with that ridiculous three-pointer down 1 point with seconds to go, hitting that shot over the Sixers defender and sending Toronto on to the NBA final or the NBA Eastern Conference Finals. That's what this game is, because that both teams have done some really good things. Both teams have done some bad things. I don't think there are a lot more adjustments to be made. There is, like, can Giannis and Chris do it together? Can you get just a skosh more from any role player, not named those two great players? And on the Brooklyn side, it is, can Kevin Durant do this by himself? Because I don't imagine that one more game, James Harden suddenly going to get those juices back.
But he's getting better. He's getting better now.
Yeah.
Somehow. I don't know how, but you can see, last night, real quick for me, I apologize for interrupting. Did you see him step back? He's starting to get confidence in that hammy to be a little bit more active.
I cannot trust the I don't know if you're the Nets that you can trust that hammy. And it is the ultimate risk reward because they might need Harden. They might, like, if Kevin Durant is as tired as he looked last night, shooting 50% from the field and 25% from three, and not facilitating and not doing all those other things, man, they're going to need Harden. If not Harden, they're going to need Kyrie to come off if he's going to be able to play, which I would be shocked if he could.
Yeah.
And here's the downside. Even if either one of those guys can go and help you get there, you risk the injury to Harden and a re-injury to Kyrie, which then probably hurts your title chances as well.
Yeah, listen, if Jeff Green is giving you 5 points, and bless his heart, my UVA guy, Joe Harris, he's in the single digits. He's shooting 1-for-4, and you would have thought he won the world championship a la Steve Kerr or somebody when he hit that 1-3. I was like, yo, if Harris and Green are giving you nothing, they don't have a chance versus this Milwaukee team unless KD erupts for damn near 50 again. And I'm not betting that is going to happen because we hadn't seen that from KD in that spot when he did it in game four. It's unlikely that he does it again in game six, though. He is one of the all-time great offensive players, especially, and maybe he can reach down in his bag. I think Brooklyn is in trouble.
I think both have a lot on the line here, but just as we're talking, and I actually think Milwaukee's in trouble, just to answer that real quick.
Okay.
Who stands to benefit, whose legacy stands to benefit more from a win in this series? Is it Giannis or is it KD?
Well, it will be, the answer to me is Giannis, because people will say, all right, he essentially competed against KD, and he had some limitations, the free throw line, the outside shooting. He fought through it, and somehow, some way, he was able to elevate his team. They're going to give KD a pass, and they're going to give KD a pass for two things. Well, you're saying if KD were to win. If KD wins, they'll say the all-time great performance by one of the all-time great players, and in spite of injuries to Durant and Kyrie, this is what great players do, and most of that will be true, but it'll be embellished a little bit because there are a lot of people that like Kevin Durant.
I think Giannis has got to win this. I honestly don't know that Giannis can do it. I don't know. I mean, just because if James Harden is heating up, and you're right, well, he's doing it in front of a Brooklyn audience. You know, like if Kyrie can play, he's doing it in front of a Brooklyn audience. Giannis has to go on the road against a team that has maybe the best two-way player in the NBA, if it isn't Giannis. The other, like, the guy that some people are trying to say, and I saw it on Get Up Today, that he's afraid of, and he's afraid of guarding in Kevin Durant. And, oh, by the way, he's got to do it for a guy who at points in this series, in Giannis, in Brooklyn, who has appeared to be afraid of the moment. So if Giannis gets this win, and I think it'd be brilliant if we've been calling for it for the first six games, I think it'd be brilliant if Bud, to start that game, puts Giannis on KD and says, go get him, big fella. I think that would be a brilliant move.
I don't love that strategy because you're going to need Giannis's energy down the stretch. And P.J. Tucker has been effective against KD. Let him keep going. I know he erupted the other game, but continue to make KD work with I just had his name, P.J. Tucker.
P.J.'s not going to get those calls, man. We saw it in Game 5. P.J.'s not – he is a role player in the NBA. As much as you and I like that dog, and Chad Harris on the text line saying the Hornets could use a dog like P.J. Tucker as a defender, and I agree.
Absolutely, yeah.
But I think if you're Giannis, you have to have a complete game. And when I say complete game, I think you got to do it on both sides. I think you have to impact and wear down Kevin Durant. And maybe it's not possible. Maybe he can't do it. But if I'm Mike Budenholzer or Budenholzer, whatever we're calling him these days.
Budenholzer.
Uh-huh, sure. If I'm him and my career as a head coach in the NBA, my reputation is on the line.
Which
I'm
it
gonna
is.
I'm going to put it on the guy who should be able to impact this game on both sides of the ball. 704-570-9610. The Bucks push it to seven games here. Where are you leaning with the seventh game in Brooklyn? Do you feel more confident about Brooklyn, or do you feel more confident about Milwaukee? Radio Tinder next on Sports Radio FNC. Hello, FNC. Nick Wilson, Stan Norfleet. I cannot get over, Stan, that the U.S. Open right now is being led by a guy named Richard Bland.
What's wrong with the man's name?
Because if I shorten Richard to what I could call him.
You mean his nickname?
What could be? I don't know that it's his nickname. I'm not talking about Richie or Rich, by the way. I'm talking about, think about a former.
Rick.
Not Rick, nope. Very close, though.
Different letter.
Replace the R with a different letter. I'm sorry. Richard Bland? Imagine trying to go to Harris Teeter and pick up a lady, Stan, with the nickname Richard Bland. Like, your parents hate you if your last name is Bland and your first name is Richard, because the jokes that are to be made about Richard Bland.
Why do you keep wanting to make...
Because I want to say the shortened name, and I'm trying to think, like, it's a
name. Not a great idea.
It's a name.
It is a name. Yep.
Do his parents hate him? Be honest.
No, because he's wealthy, because he's playing professional golf, and he probably has a lovely wife. He probably had his pick of
Who
lovely
probably
women.
Probably knows that he's Richard Bland.
But the account is not bland. Bank account is probably okay. Well, listen, man, y'all know me. We've been doing this for many years. When that checkbook is right, when that bank account on swole, you can get away with a lot. Weight, thinning hair, tattoos on your face, bad breath.
It's okay if your isn't swole.
Your equipment could have complication. Whatever you got going on, if the number's right, you're not going to have a problem finding some folks to sit beside you.
All right, let's get into Radio Tinder because we're starting here. 704-570-9610. Nick Wilson, Stan Norfleet with you. We want to know. It's Radio Tinder. Give us a name, a topic, an idea, a statement, and we will swipe left if we don't like it. We'll swipe right if we do. Richard Bland is the worst name to have as a grown man living in the world, regardless of your bank account there, Norfleet.
Swipe left. There are worse names.
Name them.
I played with a guy. Oh, I'm sorry. I went to school with a guy. He and his brother. This was when I was at VA. His name was Majestic Map, and his brother's name, literally, government name, Scientific Map.
I'm sorry. Like, somebody's going to be like, oh, Scientific Map. I'd like to read you. Like, you can have some fun with that. There's no end result in Richard Bland that somebody's like, I want to rock with Richard Bland.
There used to be a DB named Yabuti.
Okay, Ashton Yabuti. Yep. And that does make it sound like something's going on there. But I've now forgotten Ashton Yabuti. 704-570-9610. We want to hear from you guys. Richard Bland, great name. Swipe left, swipe right. As we wait for you guys on the text line, Phil Mickelson at the U.S. Open, very grumpy, very, very grumpy yesterday about cell phones and their fans. Here's what Lefty had to say.
Yeah, Phil, on your second shot on 13, I think you had to step away from the ball about three times. There were cell phones chirping all around you. And given where you ended up on the next shot, how much of a factor was that and in the round?
Yeah, it's part of professional golf. You have to learn to deal with it. I don't understand why you just can't turn that little button on the side, into silent. But I probably didn't deal with it, you know, internally as well as I could have or as well as I need to. I mean, it's part of playing the game out here at this level. And certainly I didn't do the best job of dealing with it.
All right. Swipe left, swipe right. Phil Mickelson and just golfers in general being concerned about people's cell phones going off. Chotch move. Swipe left or swipe right?
Swipe light. Excuse me, swipe light. Swipe left.
That's riding the fence.
Listen, man. Show some decorum when you're out there on the golf course. It's a gentleman's game. Therefore, the spectators should be ladies and gentlemen. Allow the golfers to concentrate.
I'm sorry. Like, I just saw Trey Young a week ago, 2 weeks ago, have 50,000 New Yorkers screaming, bleep you, Trey. Talking about the fact that the 23-year-old, soon-to-be 100 millionaire, is balding. And Phil Mickelson's like, did somebody at Florida Georgia Line as their ringtone? Can you guys shut it down?
Shh.
Sugary
we don't do
soft.
That here.
You are soft. These golfers, guys, I'm sorry.
Oh, stop it.
Like, what's next? Do we have to shoot down birds out of the sky because they're chirping?
No, that's natural white noise. That's God's white noise in the background.
No.
Not somebody's Galaxy S21 doing some bleep.
I think the problem is these whites can't handle the noise. I think that's the reality of the situation.
Oh, my God.
Grow up, Phil. Good God. This brings me back to what Nota Begay said. Like, Phil doesn't like Torrey Pines. Like, Phil does not like it. He's not comfortable there.
It's his home course.
Yes, and he doesn't like it. There's some other reasons that he doesn't like it as well that don't really have anything to do with the course itself.
Mm-hmm.
But Phil's just finding things to be grumpy about. I'm going to use a Norfleetism.
Oh.
Hey, Phil and all the rest of you golfers, sack up, all right? LeBron has people calling him a B left and right, and Phil's like, can you turn off your phone? Please?
No, that's the culture. NBA, NFL, Major League Baseball, and other sports, in tennis. You don't just hear people shouting in tennis. I mean, they do cheer when it's appropriate time to cheer, but
then
it's a concentration
well.
Sport.
They need to sack up as well, because I'm calling BS on that. I'm absolutely waste of space right there. Sack up, Phil Mickelson.
Are you allowed to cheer in water polo?
I'm not sure. I've never been to a water polo match.
All right, moving on. Brady Christensen, Panthers starting right guard, week one. Swipe left or swipe right?
Swipe left. Brady Christensen will not be starting for the Carolina Panthers at any position. Not that I have anything against Brady Christensen. I just think there are some better alternatives to start off
so
than going with
him. So you feel better about a six-round pick starting over a second-round pick?
No. I'm saying he won't start. Swipe left.
Oh, no, I know, but I'm assuming, and this is what happens when you assume, I'm assuming you mean that you think your boy Deontay Brown's going to start.
Yes. Deontay Brown is a better offensive lineman than Brady Christensen. They both have different strong points and weaknesses, but overall, what I think this team needs to do, which is establish the run and play action off of that, put big Deontay Brown beside Taylor Moten and let's run that way.
By the way, we have some fantastic...
I see the names coming
in. The fantastic names coming in, including somebody's father whose name... or went to a high school with a guy whose name is Eric Liss. and his father's name was Richard. That's your parents hate you. Like, let's just be real honest. If your last name is not favorable to the suffix of Richard, and your parents still call you Richard, your parents didn't want you. That's what that's saying. Or your parents are thoughtless. Either way, get new parents. Get a new parent. Amazon's pursuit of Peyton Manning. Pro Football Talk report today that Amazon is considering pursuit of Peyton Manning. So my radio tinder is Peyton Manning could get you to watch Thursday Night Football.
I'm going to watch Thursday Night Football regardless. So swipe left on Peyton Manning being the reason that I'm watching Thursday Night Football.
Swipe left on that bleep. When it is week 8 and it's the New York Jets versus the Houston Texans and both teams are completely defeated, nobody's got to win, you're not watching that game. You know how I know? Because nobody watches that game, even somebody as pathetic as me.
Yeah, I'm watching the game. I don't go to games for broadcasters. I appreciate their talent, and you know they're in our industry, and I support. We both know people that do that. That's not something that I have an interest in from a play-by-play standpoint. But I'm there for the game. The guys that have helmets and shoulder pads, like I'm doing that. So no, Peyton Manning is cool, and Amazon can clearly afford him. Oh, by the way, Amazon Prime Day is coming up next week, isn't it? Isn't it Monday, Tuesday?
I think so.
It's Bill, get in here. When is that?
I don't know why you'd go to me about that.
I thought you knew about that type of stuff.
No, let's move on here, gentlemen.
Okay, sorry.
I just like that you're just, you know what, stay out of that man's pocket.
Yeah, I'm coming from Stan. Yeah,
Amazon.
Man, come on, get out of my business, brother.
I just asked you if you knew what day it was. It's 2 days. I think it's next week. I think it's Monday, Tuesday.
You got Google. All right. Kemba Walker will land in a better position post-OKC than he was in Boston. Swipe left, swipe right.
The chances of Kemba Walker landing with two other All-Stars. Swipe left. He's going to be in a good spot. I just don't know if that other spot will have two All-Stars.
I'm going to swipe right.
Really? Okay.
LeBron James will either end up with the Clippers or he's going to end up with
LeBron
the
James?
Or, sorry, Kemba Walker.
I was like, whoa, LeBron's going to the Clippers now?
I think Kemba will end up either a Clipper, a Laker, or a Maverick. That's my official prediction, and it will be fantastic. And Kemba will finally get close to sniffing a real title chance now that he's out of that dump in Boston. We are so excited. Swipe right on how excited we are, Billy, to announce the return of Sky Show Fireworks this 4th of July. Swipe right on Sky Show Fireworks.
Swipe right.
Since 1976, swipe right on that year. There's no better way to celebrate the 4th of July than with family, friends, Charlotte Knights baseball, and the biggest and best 4th of July fireworks show in the Southeast. Swipe right again. It's the Return of Sky Show, sponsored by Audi Charlotte and Universal Windows Direct. Swipe twice right for our sponsors. Sunday, July 4th at Truist Field in Uptown. Visit WFNZ.com for details. We've got to get into Kemba Walker being traded after 2 years in Boston. He's on the move. That's next on Sports Radio FNZ.